folks. Welcome to the East Texas News Roundup, our first week of December episode. Here with the guys again this week. Hey, Chris, how's it going over in Woodville?
Oh, Valerie, it's same old in the eastern part of our world over in Woodville and Tyler County.
Jason.
Yes.
What's happening in Trinity County? Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well in Trinity County. We're about to embark on a brand new journey. We, at the beginning of the year, are going to merge the Groveton News and the Trinity Standard.
So, in a couple more weeks, you'll be the editor of the Trinity County News Standard.
Yes, I will.
Okay. What about down south, Mr. Jacob? I just want to show you. I do know your name.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that Jason had a pause before he said anything. I think he was stunned that you got his name right.
Yeah. Okay.
Broke tradition.
So J2.
J2.
J1 and J2.
There we go.
Everything's fine in Sangamon County. I say that ironically. we just had the blue and white Christmas event, which was strangely quiet. The parade was short. The gathering at the Shepherd High School was pretty big. Everything before it was very quiet and couldn't help but notice that. And then, as I mentioned a while ago, Monday night, things got really interesting.
So let's back up one second. Okay. By quiet, do you mean it was a subdued celebration compared to the all-out wild celebration that San Jacinto County is capable of?
Well, I mean, the thing is, San Jacinto County has two major Christmas events. One of them is the Blue and White Christmas event, and the other one is, of course, Christmas on the Square event. Now, Christmas on the Square, I think, tends to be the bigger of the two events. And when I say bigger, I mean, if you ever see the vendors around the square, they actually have two rows around the square for that event. I don't think they've ever had it like that for any other weekend that they've ever had it for any of their other events. But usually there's been a lot of activity at the parades and whatnot. I mean, there's certainly, and also the vendors prior before that. But when I went to go see the vendors, there was no one there. And one of the persons that told me it had been open for a couple hours, and they had said it's just been kind of quiet. And they moved it this year. Usually they have it in Shepherd Public Library's Gazebo Park. Mm-hmm. They moved it to the Shepherd Community Center this year. You know, it was just a little quiet. There didn't seem to be as many floats this year as there were in previous years. Usually in previous years, I can get all the photos from that one thing. That could be one event right there. I mean, I actually looked at one of my old articles at the Houston Chronicle. I had like 12 photos from the parade alone. Mm-hmm. There's no way I could pull that off, even if all my photos went off without a hitch, you know, and I got good quality shots on every last float. It just was not going to happen. You know, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just lack of interest. Maybe they didn't. Maybe the word wasn't out quite as much. It just depends. You never know. I think it's probably just the word may not have gotten out quite as much. That's what I think. Because it's usually a pretty decent sized event for Shepherd. I hope that we get to see it bigger next year.
All right. And then you were segueing your way.
Yes, I was.
You were sashaying into your big news.
Sashay.
So,
that term.
Good I'll put garbage. It to you this way. I don't know if you two guys know about this, but last week we had someone wanting to get in contact with me, who is Nan Cantell. She's one of the residents in San Jacinto. Well, she just moved recently, but prior to all that, she's been pretty big in San Jacinto County, usually involved with the Historical Commission. Told me I needed to be at Cold Spring City Council meeting. And all I understood was that apparently something went down in last month's meeting. I was not able to attend that one, but I have the minutes here for the last meeting. And what it says in old business here is that Alderman Greg Vore said that the minutes should be recorded in the future and have more details in the notes. And he stated very loudly that he wants to address the fact that she, referring to the city secretary, Suzanne Boudreau, called him a liar at the last city council meeting.
Ow.
Yes. And she said she did not. He stood back up, slapped the table, and hollered, "You are a liar." Greg Vore continued ranting about what was said at the last meeting about the concrete removal. At this point, Greg Vore shouted at Alderman Kyle Curry, "Do you know what that job should have cost? $25,000. Mayor Pat Eversole asked Greg Vore, "How are we supposed to contact him about city business when he will not answer the city phone calls or hers? He doesn't answer unknown phone numbers, and the city number isn't listed. Plus, he's too busy to always answer his phone." It says Greg Vore, still hollering, told Pat Eversole, "I don't want you ever call my phone. I don't like you, and I can't stand to look at you. I can't stand to look at you." And Alderman Kyle Curry asked if there was any new business. And at the same time, Pat Eversole loudly responded, "I don't like you either, and you don't have to look at me. You don't have to look at me." And that was pretty much it as far as what happened in the November meeting. So Monday night, I'm there. Having learned this, Greg was very quiet. Mm-hmm. He rarely spoke a word. And at that night, Steve Roberts was present. For those of you who are listening that don't know, Steve Roberts was one of the candidates running on the Republican ticket for San Jacinto County Judge. And he happens to be a lawyer, and he passed out information to the city council. He also gave me a copy of it here of a intent to file a suit. And it says Suzanne Boudreau, plaintiff versus City of Cold Spring, Texas, and Greg Vore, defendants. And I think it's based on what I'm understanding, I think it's primarily against Greg Vore, but it was just a very interesting set of circumstances.
Is it for slander or what is it for calling her?
I'd have to go over it just to be certain because I don't want to speak out of turn.
Right. But we'll review that. And get something up online about, you know, right. What are the allegations in the suit. And, you know, there's a whole lot to unpack there. That's
a lot, yes.
You know, if you're elected to city council, then, yeah, you pretty much got to answer phone calls from city hall.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jacob.
I'll be frank. The only two people in the council that I've gotten to know are Suzanne Boudreau and Mayor Pat Eversole. Mm-hmm. You know, and I got introduced to most of the council members at one of their meetings here a few months back. I don't know a lot of them personally to really give me an opinion on them, but this was pretty interesting. There was a moment where Greg did get a little aggressive. He said that something that was said about conversation he might have had was a bit, was not quite as accurate as Mayor Pat Eversole had relayed, which I don't think she was intending to misrepresent him on it, but it's just, and so, first of all, that's not true, you know, and that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, that was really the only time he spoke in the whole meeting. That was after they had executive session. But it was just interesting to see that it went far enough that a lawyer is getting involved.
Right. Mm-hmm. Was the city attorney present when they were in executive session?
No. Now, she has listed that the city attorney is Greg McGee, which is weird because I believe Greg is mostly involved in Precinct 4. But
well, he's a elected justice of the peace.
Right.
But he can advise the city on legal matters.
I think that's what they had said, because they actually didn't mention that in their meeting in general, that he can advise the city on legal matters. But yes, he is mentioned in the lawsuit here.
Wow. Interesting.
So could you feel the tension when you made this last city council meeting? Was it kind of an odd situation to be reporting out and privy to?
You're talking about this Monday?
Yes.
Not particularly, because, I mean, there's not a lot that phases me. You got to understand, my first year reporting, I watched Terry Holcomb get
thrown out of commissioner's court.
Thrown out of commissioner's court, and then subsequently arrested. So, I mean,
wow.
Yeah, that was an interesting.
And you've seen a county judge get cuffed and stuff over there.
I haven't seen him get cuffed. I reported on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I knew it was going to happen. I actually knew that about 2 or 3 days before it was going to happen.
Oh, wow.
They were getting ready to go cuff him. That was fun.
Well, not fun. It was unusual.
Very unusual set of circumstances, yes.
I use the term fun ironically.
Yes.
But I use a lot of terms ironically, but you can listen to me long enough, you'll figure that out.
So I've been going to city councils for a long time, about as long as some of y'all have been alive. But sometimes it's really hard for a town like Groveton to find the people who are willing to step forward and take that time away from Dancing with the Stars and their family and other important issues to show up and make decisions and be the sounding board for the public that wants the city to take a different direction. Or since all of the cities in our coverage area have pretty limited resources, they, you know, there's always people who want their streets to be better and their drainage to be better and water service better, faster, stronger, clearer, more sparkly.
And less smelly.
And Dr. Pepper flavored.
Speaking of smelly and city council drama, one particularly interesting city council meeting I covered years ago was actually in Groveton. And it wasn't anybody on council, but it was a resident within the city who came before council one night during a public forum and quite vehemently announced that if city council and the mayor didn't do something about his neighbor's smelly horses, he was going to go over there with his shotgun and kill every one of them. And it was quite an interesting.
You can have livestock within the city of Groveton, so
yes,
that's an issue you have to address with zoning.
Exactly.
And if you're going to move all of the horses and chickens out of Groveton, the population's going to drop.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes. And on the note of slander, as we mentioned earlier, I have a funny slander story from my time at the Madisonville Meteor. I had this student intern named Coy, who's now a good friend of mine. I was giving him a lesson on slander. Mm-hmm. And he said, so if I said Jason got run over by a reindeer, would that be slander? I'm like, well, technically no, because I have hit a deer with my car before. But then he said, okay, how about Jason shot his mom? I'm like, yes, that would be slander.
Yes.
So a lot of time he'll bust out with Jason shot his mom and I'll just be like, ah, liar, liar.
Yeah. I mean, knowingly false. Can't prove it in court. Because like we know your mom is still alive. So obviously you didn't shoot her. And things that are knowingly false and generally in the news business, it's libel since it's in written form.
Exactly. But, in the words of Jameson, slander is spoken. When it's written, it's called libel.
It's true. Absolutely.
Right. Public officials, you can pretty much say a lot more about them. You can call someone who's been elected to office a dirty, no good, two-timing horse thief, and where you probably couldn't say that about your Sunday school teacher.
Right.
No. And Jacob, really I had no idea that your name was Frank because you said, I'll be Frank earlier.
I'm not going to comment on that.
I'm not going to comment on that. Nice to meet you.
So we need little gag sound effects.
Mm-hmm. Rim shots.
I think in this case we need a wah, 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 wah,
wah. I used to have an ad rep in Gonzales who would do that noise on a regular basis. Miss Jessie.
Oh, yes. I remember Miss Jessie. And our good old buddy Rob.
Yes.
So speaking of interesting things in our respective areas of coverage, I say not a lot changes in Tyler County, good old Tyler County. But we had an interesting event that happened in the last few days. Well, there's not many armed robberies that go on down there in my neck of the woods, but we had one happen the other day, and it was the lead story in this week's edition of the Tyler County Booster, which is out today, by the way. For those of you in the Boosters area of coverage who might be listening to this podcast, go pick one up if you don't already subscribe. But a suspect came into the security finance office in Woodville, and he was clad in a ski mask and gloves, and he had a weapon with him, and he demanded the two women working in there get away from the desk so he could get into the register and empty it of cash. And then he demanded one of the keys to one of their cars so he could get away. Well, the two women who were working there, they recognized this guy and very quickly called 911 as soon as he left. And within, it didn't even take 10 minutes for Woodville police to find this guy and track him to this house and make an arrest subsequently. Wow. And a lot of this was due, well, of course, the two women, they recognize the guy despite the disguise or the mask. They recognize him by his voice and his eyes. And apparently, according to the police chief down there, Scott Yosko, the man was a customer of this particular establishment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it didn't even take 10 minutes to find him. And Chief Yosko, for those of you listening to this who might not know him, he's a Woodville police chief, and he's been...
Pretty laid-back dude.
And he is the epitome, in my mind, of a great public servant. Chief Yosko is... Gosh, when the booster office flooded a few weeks ago, he was right there with his shop vac to help us out.
Right. He's a great neighbor.
He's a great neighbor. He's a great guy.
Captain Mike McCulley.
Yes, he's another one. And but Chief Yosko, he's been at that job for about 40 years. Which I think has to be a record, a police chief that I know of. But he happened to be out patrolling and he saw a car. He was listening to the radio, of course, and he saw a car that matched the description, followed them, called for backup. And sure enough, it was the guy. They found him hiding in an attic. And the suspect, his name is Calvin Coolidge Fears Jr., actually. He's been a frequent flyer in our arrest reports. And from what I understand, there's some mental illness issues. But it turned out to be he's awaiting a mental illness screening, but
maybe he can say hello to our bank robber.
Maybe so.
Because he's down in the hospital in Houston.
And that's kind of brings me up why I was bringing this up is that, it was our lead story, but there's some similarities there between your bank robber here in Polk County and Livingston and our armed robber getaway driver there in Woodville. So,
He sounds like he did a considerably greater degree of planning than about our bank robber.
Right, absolutely.
But, either way, I think we are at a stage in Texas that there are people who so desperately need help with their mental health issues that more than some perceived financial gain, that's the reason they're doing it. Because this guy, he left his Facebook page pretty wide open. But if you just read through his social media, it's pretty obvious that he wanted some help with addiction and a few other things. And that's probably the only way he could get it.
Well, you know, it's been said more than once. I mean, you've said it, I've said it, and it's said by many that the most prevalent mental health apparatus available to many people in the state of Texas are the county jails.
Yep.
This robbery, as bizarre bars it might have been in, also with the bank robbery recently here in Livingston. I mean, there's both bizarre things to take away from them, and certainly these suspects need to be brought to justice, but the mental health issues do need to be addressed, and I think that as a society, we do need to continue working toward having an honest and open discussion on mental health and freeing up some resources to look after and allow some people to get help who see no other way than to hold up a liquor store and get put into the pokey.
Yep. Representative James White, we're talking to you, dude.
Yes, sir.
Do something. Shoot up in here amongst us. We need some relief.
Yeah, that's mental health is nothing to play with. I mean, it's
not.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's no different than throwing your shoulder out or anything else.
No,
it's got to have professional people do that and not just have police officers winging it, trying to contain people who are listening to their voices a little too closely.
Yeah, you got to treat mental health with the same alacrity that you would treat cancer, diabetes, or any other disorder.
Right. I agree 110%, because just because you might not be able to see someone's symptoms or how they suffer doesn't mean they're not suffering. And I think when we finally realize that as a whole of our society, I think that the better off we'll be and the closer we'll be to getting the people some needed help.
Jacob's shaking his finger at us for pounding on the table.
Well, not y'all. I'm shaking it at Jason.
I accidentally hit the table.
Oh, my.
We have our conference table here acts like a giant drum if we touch it at all. And y'all know y'all hear it from time to time. Our great sound engineer, Jim, tries to edit it out. But sometimes if somebody's talking, you can still hear it. So, anywho.
That was speaking just a sound effect. Dubstep version of our podcast.
That's what we need to do, because that would get a lot of people on board, I think.
Absolutely.
We could have a little beatbox. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of police chiefs, Megan, who's on vacation now, we're really starting to miss you, Megan.
Hey, Megan.
We are?
Oh.
I'm kidding.
I am.
I'm kidding. Of course we do miss you, Megan.
Hi, Megan.
The police chief of Crockett announced he was going to retire on Tuesday.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I have to work on my days of the week. But anyway, so there's probably going to be a lot more news. I was privy to some off-the-record conversations. And as we record this, I'm not sure what was off and what was on. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot more to this story. Stay tuned. He's stepping down to spend more time with his family. And if you're familiar with the code there, there's more to the story.
Always more to the story. When an official elected or appointed says that they're going to spend more time with their family, it's basically the same thing as when a band breaks up and cites creative differences. So always more to the story than...
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They get out ahead of the posse.
Yes.
Both of my police chiefs are still intact.
Yeah. Well, how's Steven holding up with the double duty as city manager?
He seems to be holding his own pretty well.
Well, he's got a strong support network.
Oh, yes.
Chief Rayford.
And a good sense of humor.
What about old Chief John Rayford? I haven't seen him in a long time. How's he been doing?
He's been doing well. As you know, his officer, Richard Steptoe, was recently elected as precinct for constable.
Constable.
No, I mean, not constable.
He's JP.
JP.
He's going to be Judge Steptoe.
Yes. Judge Steptoe. Yeah.
Judge Steptoe, yes. So John will be looking for another sidekick pretty soon.
Well, was Steptoe a reserve or was he an officer?
No, he was an officer.
Because he's been in law enforcement longer than Rayford has.
Oh,
although
yeah.
Rayford's a second generation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steptoe has served in just about every department and every agency you can think of in the region. Yep. He's been DPS. He's been campus security at SFA.
I don't think he's been DPS.
Sheriff.
He was with TABC.
Maybe. Okay, yeah, that's right.
And Inspector General, I think.
Wow.
He's been a lot of...
Interesting guys. Interesting to talk to, too.
Yep.
Oh, the stories.
Yes.
The Steptoe tales.
That'd make for a good suspense movie.
Yeah. It's got a great name, too. I mean, it's a very British sounding name, but
lends itself well. But we could only have donuts in the concession stand.
Yes.
$5 for a movie theater donut. I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. No, you get half a dozen for $5. We'll be nice. Yeah.
I might be a little gentler on the pocketbook there.
Yeah, I would.
So I think 1 week it's been, well, your festivities were before this, but it's been a very subdued week. I think everybody is saving their energy for Christmas. And
pretty much.
I'm a little down about Bush 41 passing away.
Me too.
Me three.
I really like
him. I did too.
I wrote a tribute to him for the Thursday edition of the Enterprise because he was nice to my kids.
Yeah, I read it. That was a great work, by the way.
I'll have to check it out.
That.
I interned for the Texas Senate when I was a first married, and my older daughter, Melissa, was on the way, and the vice president came to see us, and they conveniently set up a Secret Service checkpoint between my office and the ladies' room.
Nice.
So I looked like I was smuggling a 12-pack back and forth down the basement of the Capitol, but... He finally said, "What do y'all think she's got in there?" Well, and we came to terms where I didn't carry extra stuff like a big purse or anything, mm-hmm. and me through the checkpoint.
You know, one of the things that she highlighted in that column was that George H.W. Bush, Bush 41, was all about a life of public service and volunteerism. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of times, I don't want to say always now in public officials or federal officials that you don't see a lot of anymore, this emphasis on volunteerism.
No.
And I think that George H.W. Bush's legacy as a whole, his entire life in public service would be defined by as a life of a true public mm-hmm. servant.
And I've quoted the letter that he wrote to Jenna.
Yes, that, back in 97,
She only snapped a portion of the letter, and I think it was just that she's 16-year-old teenage girl in Austin. I've been there. That, you know, how do you be happy? And I think her granddad was giving her some advice on how to be happy.
Right.
And he said that being useful in serving others magnifies the happiness. And this is a guy that's already got the bucks and had a lot of power, and he got a big kick out of being nice. I didn't talk about it. I got to bump into him several times over the decades. And the last time I saw him was checking in at a Houston Texans game.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a big presence at Texans games and Astros.
And Astros games, and I had a good friend who used to be a middle reliever for the Astros that talked a lot because he said he held the record, Rob Malicote, for being on the DL, and so he sat with Bush most of the time, even though he had an Astros jersey. But but also at the Texans, Bush, by that point, he was already in the wheelchair, and this, I guess, was in 2012, they were trying to get into the playoffs, and I was shooting crowd shots of the tailgating for CBS, and you have to check in that secure area. So they had Bush over in a corner because he was going to, I guess, do the coin toss for Veterans Day.
And oh, cool.
He waved and was always really approachable and kind of folks all throughout his life.
Yeah, I never got to meet him, but I've heard that from people I know who have met him, that he was very kind and just very approachable and just very gentlemanly. And one thing you mentioned just a minute ago and in the column about the letter that he wrote to his granddaughter back in 97. By that point, of course, he'd already served as president and had all these bucks from, you know, the oil industry and everything.
And the family.
And one thing that I think should be noted and probably has many times before in the wake of his passing is that he didn't have to become a public servant. He came from immense privilege, and his father, Prescott Bush, was a long-serving senator, and he chose to be a public servant, and he signed up even though he didn't have to serve in the military in World War II, and was a war hero too. And I think that one of the images that really stood out to me in all the coverage of his memorial of him laying in state was when former Senator Bob Dole, who of course Bush 41 and Bob Dole were at one time, you know, pretty bitter political rivals, but Bob Dole was helped up out of his wheelchair to salute Bush 41's coffin. And it's a very touching moment that's been circulated a lot. In reading about public figures and studying them, the things that really stand out to me are the smaller gestures that you don't hear as much about. I mean, of course, ending a war or getting us into a war is reported, you know, pretty heavily, but little things that little acts of kindness or whatever that you might not hear as much about really are what I enjoy reading about or hearing about. And there was something that I read about recently, and this story was circulated years ago. I knew I'd seen it before somewhere, but a few years ago, I think in 2013, Bush 41, one of his Secret Service men had a daughter who was undergoing treatment for leukemia, and mm-hmm. she had lost all of her hair at that point. And of course, Bush 41 was empathetic because, of course, he lost his daughter Robin back in 53 or whenever it was to leukemia and the same illness. But as a show of support and solidarity, all of his Secret Service agents shaved their heads to show support for their colleague. And President Bush did as well.
Yeah, he did it too.
Yeah.
And he was, he was particularly caring to the children of all of the people, I think, that worked around him. I've seen a bunch of pieces online, and I've got to go back and look, but one staffer who worked in his communications office when he announced that he was going to run for president, her daughter visited with the Bushes many, many times over the years. And I know my friend Dr. Johnson, who is the president of Lamar State in Orange now, he was on the HPD security detail, and I know he talks about Barbara Bush would come out the door and hand them a plate of food when the family was having Thanksgiving dinner and things like that, that just, you don't hear about that anymore, but there are millions of stories about that, about Papa Bush at his life, you know, people bumping into him. He's going to be greatly missed, and he is, can provide some leadership lessons to everyone in office.
I agree about just being a decent human being, but also about respecting national institutions and decorum and civility.
Decorum, yes. Please. Decorum.
Absolutely.
Decorum would be nice.
He was a great man. And when I heard the news.
Hear that, city council? Now, Livingston City Council is, Livingston and Woodville are very quiet, staid institutions.
Absolutely.
Same with Trinity City Council.
I never covered their city council. I heard stories, but
They're pretty quick and to the point.
Way back in the day, some of the Greg Peake stories from back in the wild frontier days.
Yeah. And speaking of Bush, he was one of the last true bipartisan presidents. He worked with both sides of the party line.
Absolutely.
And he could also be known as one of the best international affairs presidents we had. I mean,
he knew a lot, and he wanted to know. If he didn't know, he would admit it and try to find out.
Right.
He was the guy that got the save in the end of the USSR. I mean, Reagan did a lot of the groundwork to get
He transitioned us out of the Cold War, though,
and
did a great job with his foreign policy.
Well, now we're doing
leadership.
A lot to build them back.
Build them back.
To
build the USSR back.
Mr. Putin, rebuild that wall.
Rebuild that wall.
Oh, gosh, yes. And, you know, the Gulf War ended in, like, less than a month under Bush 41.
Well, and I think he always had some misgivings about should he have taken out Saddam, as Papa Bush called him.
You know, I think that's one of the things, of course, with, I don't believe in this, you know, don't speak any ill of the dead kind of mentality either, as Valerie's also said too before. And of course, you know, you've got to hold public officials up to some degree of criticism, whether they're still with us or they've gone on. But I don't agree with some of the things that were done under his watch as far as getting us into Iraq and so forth. But here's the thing. As far as domestic policy goes, or Operation Gulf Storm, the Americans with Disabilities Act is one thing that stood out to me as terms a big achievement of his four years. And that's done so much good to people with disabilities in this country as far as finding work. That's a legacy
just
of itself.
Just having access.
Right there.
I
having
don't know
access
if
to
either
help.
Of any of y'all have ever had trouble getting around, but my roommates have some trouble motoring about. And so I push a wheelchair quite a bit. And it's tricky. We were trying to get into a local realtor. Oh, Palais Royal here in Livingston, dudes. Yeah. I'll call you out. It's freaking hard to get in and out of there if you do not walk. You got to push open the doors and all of that stuff. They've got plenty of nice, accessible handicap parking, but I don't know how you wheel yourself out if you're shopping alone and you use a wheelchair.
It's sad.
You look like you're holding your tongue, Jacob.
No, I'm just, I don't have much to say at the moment.
Oh. Have you ever had a bad knee or anything and it was hard to get around?
I did actually fracture my ankle once, and it was not long after that. Well, I mean, I've got the cast on my foot that I had to cover Tarkington's Athletics Awards event, which at the time they actually held at Wolf Creek in Sanderson County.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's like they go out, have fun, and then they give out their awards and whatnot. So because of the terrain and because there are, you know, some slopes up to that little gazebo where they're giving them out, you're at one spot. If you want to be over 2 feet, you had, because of the stupid cast, you probably had to walk around like a good 20, 30 feet just to get to that spot. because it's the only way you can get there and keep stable on that stupid cast.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So glad I no longer have that cast.
Yeah. So are we.
Yes, we are. Yep.
Well, I'm going to work on spin. I think I'm going to build the grandma a motorized scooter for Christmas. How about that? Just That's go out in the garage and put a little outboard motor on a Razor skateboard.
There we go.
Yeah. She's only 95.
Oh, yeah.
She'll enjoy it. She's got
Today
this.
Is the boss's birthday, our publisher, Alvin Holly.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Alvin.
Turning
birthday, Alvin.
77 today.
Very cool. That's a good age, too. Yes.
Yeah. So
happy birthday, Mr. Holly.
He's celebrating with cake and all kinds of stuff. So
very good.
Anyway, anything else that we haven't covered? We've covered Papa Bush. We've covered police chiefs. We've covered a rowdy council in Cold Spring.
That doesn't even have Rowdy Roddy Piper in it.
I know, right? Yeah. What's up with that?
And the merger.
The merger of Trinity and Groveton.
Yes.
You know, that's going to be an interesting.
It's going to be a big step forward for some rival communities. But they've got to learn to play together well and share the crayons.
Absolutely. And because for those listening to this, there's always been a rivalry between the two main cities in Trinity, well, Groveton and Trinity, the only two incorporated cities out. That White Rock Creek has always been the dividing line. So, like Valerie said, to see if they'll learn to share and learn to play with each other.
Right. They used to go and kidnap the records out of the courthouse.
Yeah, Trinity thought they should have the courthouse, but it's in Groveton.
Right.
Which is the centrally located city.
Right. If you go in the way back machine, there was a rule that you had to be at the population center closest to the geographical center of the county because they were all set out with the idea that you could ride your horse to the courthouse and make it back home in one day.
Exactly. Yeah, and it makes sense.
Since I guess Sam Houston couldn't call an Uber.
No. But, poor guy.
No Lyft for Sam Houston.
Well, you know who was the Uber for Texans? I've been working on a story about Texas Independence Day for the magazine. You know who provided the Uber for most Texians on the Runaway Scrape? And I'm looking at Jason because I know he spent time at the starting point for the Runaway Scrape. So who provided the Uber, dude?
Who provided the Uber?
Especially getting across the rivers.
Somewhere in Gonzales.
The Alabama Coushatta Indians.
Yeah. Alabama Coushatta Indians,
because you have all these all these Anglo settlers trying to get the heck out of Gonzales ahead of Santa Ana. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the big thicket, it's kind of hard to get around. And and Chief, what's the creek over there? Why am I going blank? But anyway, those two tribes had created several trails through the dense thicket, and that was the best way to get around. But they also helped everybody, like at Columbia and places like that. You know, a lot of women with children, their husbands had already gone off with the army. So they helped a lot of folks get to Houston.
Absolutely.
Some of the, you know, the Texans, like Peter Ellis Bean, for example, wrote a lot about the meeting the Indians and the assistance they gave. And
well, if you ever go to Gonzales, be sure and visit the Eggleston House, because that was one of the a woman who walked. It was her dog trot log cabin, and now it's on one of the plaza squares. That city was actually laid out by Spanish city planners. Everything's on the square, and you've got a lot of plazas downtown. Several green spaces that are dedicated to nonprofits. So some of the wrangles, the business community, that they can't buy property right next to the courthouse. She walked from Gonzales to San Jacinto pregnant and gave birth on there right across from the battlefield. Then they came back and built that house when she and her husband, who was only about 30 years older than she was.
Wow.
Wives were, usually it took you two or three to get through life. All right.
Eggleston House, though. I have to remember that next time. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. I was down there this past weekend in that direction, but didn't hit up Gonzales, though.
Well, yeah, it's out there on what would be Central Avenue, which is not really an avenue. It's a long green space that stretches out in four directions from the courthouse.
Okay.
But anyway, everything you ever wanted to know about Gonzales, but were afraid to ask.
Sounds like a good book title.
Yes, we should write that.
Okay.
We can do that about all of our areas around here, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think the point is that there's a lot of history among our areas of coverage.
Well, I just downloaded Mary Austin Holly's diary from Kindle. She apparently was traipsing around this area a lot. Stephen F. Austin's cousin. And nice. I want to see what all she talked about. She said that Jasper and Newton, which was called Bevel's Settlement back then. There were a lot of people out there, but you can't really call it a town. That was her big quote. Mm. But that fascinated me. It's like, okay, I want to hear more of what you had to say, sister. And on that note, we hope you enjoyed what we had to say. We'll catch you right here, the same website, next week. Be nice, be careful, happy holidays, and Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.
Feliz Navidad.
What they said.
All right. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.